Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Rad Life. We are coming at you from the infamous and famous studios.
Back to the 50s.
No. Yeah, let me just start off with that since Paul brought it up. You know, with all due respect to all baby boomers out there, anybody who does not understand that we cannot go back.
What?
Okay.
Come on.
Yes, it's you said it's an illusion, and what did I call it?
You called it a delusion.
It is a delusion. Okay, and here's a freebie business development suggestion to all those therapists and life coaches out there. If you can develop the way to basically allow people to come to the realization that we can go back to a very white, okay, America, 1950s style. Okay?
The America.
Okay. That you basically would make a killing. Okay. I believe it's a growing economy, a growing sector of the market, and it needs help. So go help it. But no, I mean, it's fascinating because we talk about change. You know, my guest and I were talking.
But not just any white, because for a long time, my kind of white wasn't good either. The Catholic white was pretty bad.
Well, wait, are you from Northern Ireland or Southern Ireland?
Yeah, see, that's.
Are you from the blondes of Northern Italy or the darkies from Sicily?
I mean, exactly. We used to endlessly argue over those things. Now we sort of bunched everybody. You're okay if you know. We made the tribe bigger, but
so what you're saying is we're getting better. We're becoming more inclusive in bunching people together.
Only by demonizing the newest.
So instead of like picking on the Northern Italians and the Southern Italians or the Northern Irish and the Southern Irish,
right.
We'll just say if you're Irish, you're good.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're Italian, you're good.
For a long time, that wasn't true.
I got a newsflash for you. You know why they do that?
Why?
Because the numbers are smaller, and in order for them to register, they have to combine, right? Because the reality of the world is that the only constant is change.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
You hate that?
I hate that.
Wow, you're going to have some naked juice?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I hate that. He grabs for his
naked juice.
Right. Yeah. Now, back in the 1950s, would you have had naked juice?
No.
I rest my point.
Naked was a word we couldn't say in the air.
You couldn't say naked? And now we put it in a bottle and drink it.
Do you know, I remember when you're all so young.
Archie Bunker, yes.
I remember when Archie Bunker came in.
Yeah, Meathead,
But you don't remember that the most controversial part of that show? What was the most controversial thing they did in the show that the censors absolutely fought like hell? Was it the fact they talk about race? Was it the fact that
Rank on the air.
No, you know what it was?
What was it?
The toilet upstairs. He used to go to the toilet all the time, and he would flush it. And that was forbidden on television.
So you could drink openly on the show, but you couldn't flush the toilet.
You could talk about every ethnicity, use every racial
slur. So what you're basically telling me is that we haven't really gotten any better in terms of what we focus on. Right. Okay. Well, I'd say that's very an anal fixation, but that seems kind of redundant. So the point of this whole diatribe right now that we're going through is that change is the only constant. And whether you like it or not, it's going to happen. And I've said this for years. You either participate and partake in it, or somebody else decides for you. Okay.
You know, my father used to say, and he was not one that he would probably be voting for Trump right now, but he used to say that life is like a parade and you can either join the parade or get passed by or even run over.
Yeah, but there's another one.
Okay.
You could be the person who choreographs it.
Well, yeah, you could lead the parade. Right.
Exactly. You could lead the parade. So with that being said, and we kind of did this a little bit in 2016, I'm sorry, 2018. I can't even believe it's almost like time for another election cycle. Wow. Right? We happen to have fallen into this sort of rhythm in 2018 or leading up to 2018 where we had people that were running for office that were on the show. And it gave us an opportunity because we are very much a non-party affiliated platform.
Only the winners came on the show, though. We didn't have any of the losers on the show. Almost everybody who came on your show won.
Well, this is true, but I didn't want to really brag, so thanks for bragging for me. Okay. But we did. Yeah, we did, actually. And what it provided us as an opportunity to do is to actually tackle some stuff from a non-weighted or biased position, like literally talking about issues, talking about the people, giving them an opportunity to show what they are bringing to the table. And I said it, and I'll say it again, anybody, regardless which side of the aisle you are, which if you're in city council, it's supposed to be a nonpartisan role anyway, right? So, I mean, I know we politicize and weaponize. That's the jaded baby boomer in the corner of the studio, right? But it really shouldn't be. And I know it gets politicized and we get the, you know, like, local parties, endorsements, and all this stuff. But to be honest with you, I can speak for myself. I really don't care which party endorses you. I'm going to vote for you based on person and on issues and what I hear. And if it's beyond city council, okay, maybe. But I still, in most cases, vote person and topic and issue.
And you know what most and city I think council come down to? It's either change or no change. Either fighting against change in the community or for
What did we just say?
Yeah.
Change is the only constant.
Right.
Right? So there is a hybrid, okay? There's such words as appropriate, sensitive, okay? Proactive, okay? Because the realities of these communities in which we live in Orange County and beyond, on a national level, but even more amplified, I think, based on an article that just came out about a year and a half ago regarding the aging of Orange County, is there certain things that are happening that are unavoidable, right? And they're not happening in small pockets and small percentages. Like in the case of aging, for example, you've got 10,000 people turning 65 every day in the United States, okay? The article in the Orange County Register basically stated that per capita, we have the largest aging population in the country. Not Florida, not God's waiting room, but Orange County, and in South County, even more so. People are not moving out of their houses. They're staying in them longer.
I'm not moving.
They're not buying a lot more retail. So if you're basically counting on your retail sales, you know, it has a domino effect and a ripple effect through our communities. And yet still, even though we are absolutely not prepared for the silver tsunami, we are still kind of in denial about this. And it's gonna find us wanting and behind the eight ball to do stuff about. So with that being said, I really welcome anybody who's running for office in 2020. Please feel free to contact me. I'd love to have you in studio to talk about your platform, what you guys are locally looking to do, what are some of the issues that we are all facing as communities, what can we do about it proactively versus reactively, because when we deal with it proactively, we hold a lot more ability to have independent decision-making. When it's reactive, we're kind of behind the eight ball, we're a timeline, there's impacts that are already negatively happening, and we need to just do something at that point to stop the bleeding, if you will, right? Instead, we should be proactive. So my guest today is a person who ran for city council in the city of Irvine before and is running again 2020. So Kerry O'Malley, nice
Hello.
To have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. And it's interesting because Irvine is actually its own dynamic within the Orange County set of cities, which is about 32 cities, I think.
34
cities, right. So, you know, we deal with this as we say we're Orange County, but I think even, you know, narrowing it down, Irvine has its own dynamic. Lake Forest has its own dynamic. Costa Mesa has its own dynamic. Newport Beach, they all have their own internal stuff, right? Now, you have also bring to the table a long, professional involvement in policy.
Yes.
In advocacy, in working through governmental agencies on different levels, right?
Absolutely.
So to start us off, Kerry, why don't you give people a little bit about your background and how you found yourself to be actually in the service, in the public service sector?
Perfect. Thank you. Well, thank you for having me here on the show. I'm so honored to be here. It's a pleasure talking with you and the other folks listening in today. As far as how I got involved and my background, my husband and I moved to Irvine almost 23 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're original homeowners at our home in North Park in Irvine. We literally watched it from the ground up when it was avocado orchards.
Yeah. Not
that long ago. 23 years has gone by in a flash, really. And really have our roots roots here in Irvine. I'm born and raised in Southern California, so know Southern California very well, and very, very rooted here in Irvine. We're raising our two teenage children here in Irvine, and just so entrenched and ingrained in the community, both on the nonprofit side of things, like you said, professionally, on the public policy side. And I wear a lot of different hats with community service organizations, nonprofits, the community, helping people advocacy. And so
what are some of those hats that you've been involved in?
Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
So professionally, I've had over 20 years of public policy experience at the state and local level. Mm-hmm. When we first were here, I worked for the Orange County Transportation Authority for many years, managing state government relations and doing a lot of the state legislation for the OCTA. That was very near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. I then worked also with the OC Board of Supervisors mm-hmm. for many years, again, focusing as a senior policy advisor, focusing mainly on public safety and transportation issues, but really a wide variety of issues that affect us regionally and in the county. So really just was there for many, many years. And most recently, I am with the State Assembly, again, focusing on legislation, senior policy advisor and district director. So really wear many hats professionally, but predominantly on the state and local level has been my profession.
That's great. And you and I were talking about, you know, how we remember the days when the 210 freeway ended at Foothill. And that Foothill ended at like Haven or Vineyard in Ontario, literally with two pieces of wood that looked like the end of a railroad track. Remember that?
I do.
Right. And there was no 73 when I went to school for design school in Newport at the Interior Designers Institute, give a plug for my old alma mater. There was no 73. There was PCH or the 5. People would ask me where I live, and I would say San Clemente, which is no secret to anybody who's listened to the show. And basically, I would have to explain to them where San Clemente was in relation to San Juan Capistrano, at which point they would look at me and almost like with pity in their eyes say, why would you live in the back 40 like that? And I would say, you keep thinking that, right? But it's interesting how our environments around us change very quickly. I was just recently in Atlanta after not being there for 19 years, and I'd lived there from 98 to 2000, I think it was. And it has so changed. I mean, just things that we are not aware of changing constantly around us. And some of the changes are driven by necessity. Some of them are driven by sort of vision, right? And there's this ongoing, I think people always have sort of this nostalgic point of reference. Oh, things, the good old days. Oh, the back when, right? Things are constantly changing, and it never stops. Like, you're either engaged or you're not. And I'm not saying never stop being engaged, but they're going to happen with or without your involvement. And so you must have an interesting perspective on things, having been involved for so long. I grow so many, you know, level. So are some of the issues that you have seen over your course of your career repetitive? Do you see that there is, you know, have we dealt with things better? Are we constantly faced with the same challenges? Is it a generational thing? Is it just sort of part and parcel of a growth cycle of a city? What have you seen? Because you've been involved in it long enough to have a different perspective for somebody who doesn't.
Absolutely. I think that's a great question. Thank you. So I mentioned we moved here almost 23 years ago. We were renting out of the West Park Village of Irvine for a couple years before a North Park existed.
Right.
And my commute, and I say this with a smile on my face because like you said, it's very nostalgic.
Yeah.
My commute was basically taking Jamboree to the 5 freeway, mm-hmm. getting on the 5 freeway and going up to OCTA every day.
Yeah.
And the 5 at that, I mean, the Jamboree by the 5 at that time was, as I tell my kids, a two-lane rickety road with a wood partition in between.
Yep.
And I can see it in my mind today. And it brings a smile to my face.
Yep.
Now it's the 261. So it brings a smile to my face. But yes, but also back then in Irvine, our population was 150,000 residents.
Yep.
We are over 277,000 residents today.
More than
we've
twice.
Exploded as far as almost doubling in size with our residents in Irvine. So absolutely, we needed to accommodate for that. Mm-hmm. For that, the two-lane rickety road, although it brings a smile to my face and it's nostalgic, today that two-lane rickety road would be pure vehicles back
well,
to back.
Let me ask you this, because you know, over that period of time, basically 2 decades,
mm-hmm.
okay, you have had more than doubling.
Correct.
2.5 times
almost.
The population.
Almost double.
Yeah.
Almost double.
Mm-hmm. So that doesn't happen in a community where you have a decrease in birth rate. Okay. That doesn't happen when people basically are all born and raised in Irvine. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is it's because there's a lot of people that are from elsewhere that are now basically, when we say resident, they're living there. It's not even the population that's just working there and commuting, right? Okay. So with that change in terms of demographic numbers, there also comes a change in probably the makeup of the population in a city like Irvine, right?
Correct.
So over the 22 years of you living there, have you seen that changing demographic mix echoed through the city council's approach to things, or do we drag?
That's a great question. And I think one of the reasons I ran in 2018 and I was runner up by 1%.
Right.
So, and looking definitely to be running in 2020, very excited to be doing so. But I think that marries the question that you asked previously about my public service background.
Right.
And
right.
How did I, other, yes, I have the public policy background and the longevity in Irvine, but what really inspired me to run?
Right.
And I think that hits upon that question as well. All my life instilled by my father, by my mother, by my grandmother, who we chatted a little bit about her before coming on the show. It's been instilled in me a strong work ethic, dedication, honesty, and the willingness and desire from down deep to serve public service.
This is your Irish grandmother, right?
We laugh because I'm Irish by marriage.
I'm
exactly. But no, my Armenian grandmother, who literally...
Case in point of what we're talking about.
Exactly. And so literally we grew up with my father and my grandmother and my mother. And it was really a life of public service, a life of giving back. And what can we do to help others? It's not about us as just... alone, it's a community.
I'll just mention this because I have a lot of people that I know that are friends of mine that are from multiple, call it national ethnic backgrounds, but that are all Armenian, and that is a very strong string that runs through the Armenian community of being of service,
correct,
of excelling,
correct,
and part of it is driven by difficulties and necessities that's
correct.
Ingrained into that passed on generation to generation culture.
Yes.
And I think there's certain, Vietnamese, I'm going to assume is the same. The Cambodians are the same. There's some Middle Eastern, like my father's Palestinian originally. So I think there's a part of this that gets ingrained through adversity.
Correct.
The Jewish community is the same thing, where we basically, we don't necessarily maybe at the surface realize that.
Correct.
And how much of a driving force and purpose that gives your life.
Absolutely. And I think you've hit upon something absolutely key in my life. Even as a teenager, I was helping children in college. I was helping abused children. I became a CASA, court-appointed special advocate, for instance, in law school.
An amazing organization.
Thank you. And I'm still a CASA. I'm still very much involved. Mm-hmm. I've been an advocate for CASA children for years. So when I came back to Orange County, I trained again to be a CASA. And I've advocated for everybody from an infant all the way up to a teenager about to be emancipated. And it's been very near and dear to my heart. Likewise with my role as a board member on the Joyful Child Foundation in memory of Samantha Runyon.
Yeah.
I do a lot of work with Aaron Runyon on public safety issues, really trying to help the safety of children of our communities. So this drive, like you said, to help others, to help our community, and to be a public servant has led my life.
Right. And I love it when we basically stand up and thank veterans for their service.
Absolutely.
But I do believe that the same reverence applies to people that are in public service.
Thank you.
No, it's true. And especially when you're basically looking out for and protecting a population that's at risk. Okay. I mean, I'm proud to be an oncoming board member of Project Independence, who we've had on the show a number of times, that works for occupational opportunities for people with special needs and mental challenges and mental difficulties. And I think those are unsung heroes that are not, I'm not taking away any one iota from the military, but the same reverence that we basically say almost automatic now, thank you for your service when somebody says they're a veteran. I think that applies to teachers. That applies to people that are advocating for safety for children, people that are basically running, battered women's shelters, people that are working on the homeless issues, that are doing it not for the glory of doing it, because God knows it's not glorious work. It's hard work, and it's emotionally draining work that, you know, you don't walk away from when you stop working on it. But it's also something that those people did not serve that way, like you were doing through CASA, there is a direct impact on our communities negatively by losing those people and their input.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. I think that it's such a backbone to our community to have these nonprofits to work as a community, right, to help some of the communities within our community, right, that need our assistance. I've done a lot with Families Forward, with Human Options, right, because I'm a junior league member of Orange County for over 20 years. So when we moved to Irvine, I immediately became a junior league of Orange County member. I'm still a member to this day. I'm a sustaining member. And we have kind of our footprint, right, throughout Orange County on many of the nonprofits you just mentioned, and really helping women and children and domestic violence victims, mm-hmm, and really helping those that need us within the community.
Well, and you said something to me that I found kind of interesting and sort of telling, is that you said that you went to school, and got a degree in law.
Well, actually, my two degrees are philosophy and law and society, and then I went to law school and decided to actually go into public policy. So I've predominantly been focused public policy my whole career.
And you decided going into that coming out of,
yes,
out of school, right?
Yes, yeah. My whole career.
It was what I found interesting was it was a conscious decision.
Correct.
To pursue that path.
Absolutely.
Versus kind of find yourself into it.
Correct.
Yeah. Paul, what's the question?
And yet I'm reminded when I was a kid, not that long ago, that we used to spit at veterans when they came back from Vietnam, and we similarly seem to spit at public policy people today and politicians.
You know,
there is an embrace of this notion that they're all crooks and the problem.
That's a very interesting parallel, Paul. I don't know that we've ever discussed it that way, but yes, it wasn't that long ago when we held veterans accountable for maybe the policy that the government misguidedly, you know, let us down.
Exactly.
in case of Vietnam. and we look at teachers, we look at people that are public servants, and we have sort of a disdain. And it's really funny because if you really take away the services and the benefits that these people are engaged in on a daily basis and should be compensated accordingly, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, yes, they provide a valuable and necessary service. Would you ever basically talk about the military basically? Well, you know what? We should basically eliminate the pensions for the military. Let's just get rid of the pensions for the military, right? Because it's just costing us too much. Well, I mean, person protecting your home or defending your way of life halfway across the world, they're not any more or less valuable than the person who's looking out for the best interest of your children.
Correct.
Who's basically, you know, grooming future generation basically to be, you know, productive members of society and have a moral compass, et cetera. So, but I want to just bring it back to a less philosophical kind of conversation here and say, but, you know, Irvine is the shining city on the hill. So, you know, there are no issues in Irvine. I mean, you guys just expanded the spectrum. I mean, come on. How can a city that has a Hello Kitty cafe, okay, next to a Nordstrom and, you know, a Havana Cuban restaurant, how can that city have any issues?
I love your question. So, you know, what I find, and you asked, and again, this kind of ties back to your initial question. My phone rings all the time, or my text will go off, or I'll get an email. So many people come to me. I've been a community leader now for decades, mm-hmm, and ingrained in Irvine, and they'll come to me from everything from, I need to go know where to go for this for my child, to I'm having an issue. How do I go to the planning commission? Do I go to the council? Where do I go with my question? And I've really helped advocate for individuals, whether it's a sole person or a full neighborhood has come to me. When I was transportation commissioner, mm-hmm, chair, I had whole neighborhoods coming to me with transportation questions or issues that they wanted to bring to the transportation commission and really help vet those issues and get those issues addressed. And I think that's what really inspires me, that life of public service, but being someone's resource, their advocate, their voice. Mm-hmm. So a lot of folks may be working in business or maybe working, you know, in whatever profession they're in, but they don't know where to go day to day for that local government question mm-hmm. or a service they might need. And so my phone is constantly ringing with those types of questions. And I so enjoy helping connect people with mm-hmm. services or helping connect people with their answer or get their, you know, their issue looked at. And that's one of the reasons that really drives me to be someone's advocate, to be their resource. And with my knowledge of Irvine and of public policy, it's something that that comes very easy to me because I have done this professionally sure. for over 20 years. And I know who to go to for what or what agency would resolve what issue.
So you ran before.
Yes.
And what did you discover in the course of running?
So I very much enjoyed running. It was a wonderful experience. I have run for my HOA before. I've run 3 times for my HOA and I've won 3 times for my HOA. Uh-huh. So in Irvine, as you know, we're in villages and I live in the village of North Park, which is one of the largest villages in Irvine. We are 1,600 homes. Not residents, homes. And so I do sit on the HOA as
your villages.
And my village, our villages, yeah, yeah. But that is the villages yeah, of Irvine. That is what it's termed and their right. neighborhoods. Right. And so I had run for HOA, but I had never run for a city or statewide office before. So running for this citywide office, and we are not districted, as you know.
Right.
And we're a community
of
275,000 residents. Mm-hmm. So it was wonderful. I fully embraced it. I walked precincts for 4 months. Mm-hmm. I so enjoyed talking to residents, having community coffees, mm-hmm. forums, town halls, really loved the one-on-one connection with the neighborhoods and with the individuals and the residents of Irvine. So I embraced it, very much enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to doing that again.
I just want to ask one question. Is it just me, Paul, or is this whole push for districting that was really hot and heavy last election cycle also to disappear? It just dawned on me that we were all hot and heavy and people were threatening yeah. lawsuits to cities to district and blah, yeah. blah, blah. I mean, I don't want to call it gerrymandering, but if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a gerrymandering duck. But is it just me or a couple of years ago?
It's just,
yeah, I'm
you.
Just, I don't know. I've had too much
you
coffee. I'm conscious and aware and awake. And,
you want to remember just, these things and throw them back in our
not,
face.
Not,
yeah.
a, not just a zombie. Yeah. You know what? I kind of like that. It's a pastime for me.
I got to ask one question.
But hold on. I yeah. really would like an answer. Am I remembering correctly?
Hey, look, there's a squirrel over there.
No shiny object distraction. Nice try, Irishman. Okay. But, seriously, it just dawned on me while you're talking, right, that the issue of districting was hot and heavy last election cycle.
Yeah.
And it may come back again next year, you
of
know,
course.
Before 2020. But it's funny how, like, we stopped talking about it after 2018.
So,
like, it went away. Like, nobody's threatening a lawsuit. You know, nobody's discussing, minorities underrepresentation. Nobody's saying a damn thing. And I'm not pointing fingers on either side of the aisle, but I'm just thinking it's kind of ironic.
You're gonna get us in trouble.
It's kind of
sure,
ironic. I'm sorry, the member has no clothes. I can look behind the
you
curtain,
see
right?
Anybody in this room that
hey,
wants
listen,
to reopen
I,
that
I,
can
I,
of worms.
I am curious. I, enough to look behind the curtain at all times. That's why people won't let me in their houses. Okay. Because I want to know what's behind the
I
curtain.
I want to change this. I got to ask one question, though.
Go ahead.
And this is in all seriousness, I because I do think there
what
is.
What was the last time you asked anything? In
well,
all
not very often, but this one will be serious. I do appreciate people who, like your guest today, have put years and years into.
Thank you for your
accumulating
service, Gary. I'm serious.
Experience.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Why then do we seem to live in an era where anybody from the outside instantly looks better to us? People with no experience somehow we're so hungry as a society. Are we that unhappy with what's happened? Are we that unhappy
no, it's the
with
same,
the public
it's the,
policy?
It's the same reason where you like the pasta at Luigi's restaurant and you go there, you've been going there for 20 years and then, Franco down the street opens a little tapas Italian hybrid whatever gastro
you
pub
go there.
And you
got
to go there.
But I think it's deeper than that. I do think there is a reason.
The grass is greener. Oh, what's over there?
There is a feeling somehow. So many politicians come out and say, I've never been in government, and people applaud. I'm not part of that mess, that problem. Is there a perception that people who have participated in government are somehow tainted?
So that's a great question. And actually, in Irvine, I think we're a little bit different than some of the, other cities or even statewide. In Irvine, as I call it, when I threw my hat in the race, I said nobody knew how many people would run, that, it was still open. And I said to my friends and family, it will be typical Irvine, which is 7 to 12 for two. That's just what I say, 7 to 12 for two. And sure enough, it was 12 candidates for two positions. I came in third. I came in runner-up. I was winning all night, and the next morning it flipped just by a hair, you know, and so I did come in just under 1% from the second place, you know, candidate.
Right.
However, I think what we're finding in Irvine, it's name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more name recognition. The last person that ran just straight out of the gates and won their first time around was in 2010.
Right.
And so since then, it's been almost a decade.
That tends to be a bit of a reality. Name recognition is big.
And the other thing to remark on, so in government, it's interesting. You have those that have run for office maybe and are more kind of campaign or politically involved, so to speak. And then there's people like me where it's different. It's public policy, which I think is completely different.
You're looking away from the mic here again.
Sorry about that. I think it's a little bit different to be in public policy versus to be in maybe someone who, like you mentioned.
Public office.
Exactly. And so in public policy, it's a little bit different than a campaign. Mm-hmm. Or it's very different, actually. It's more the you're drafting ordinances, you're drafting legislation, you're mm-hmm. looking at how can we solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
There's problem X. What do we do? How do we craft legislation?
That's part of the job description for elected officials?
It's not, but that's what I bring to the table. It's not a job description.
I thought it was just a seat warmer that keeps sitting there.
So
until they run for something else.
Right. Oh no, it's good to have that quality. I think that's what I bring to the table, in that I can look at an issue and say, how do we resolve this?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need an ordinance? Do we need to seek state legislation? What is the easiest way or most productive way, I should say, to find an answer, a most expedient, that's productive, that would benefit all residents? How do we do that?
See, but that requires leadership. That requires actually an interest in proactively leading.
Correct.
Versus just putting, you know, taking out the fire hose and trying to put out a fire once it starts.
Correct.
And it's just a
matter
of
your head cut off if you're the leader.
Right. No. It's not that you get your head cut off. It's the fact that you may risk losing your seat.
Well, yeah.
But you see, I don't know that being elected is about being a warm body in the seat as much as that you're elected to do a job. And I think that gets lost in the shuffle, in the magic, or whatever you want to call it.
But I'm gonna put you on the hot seat here, because you've been an advocate in the show for other times for term limits.
Dude, I live in a hot seat.
Okay. And yet, what I'm advocating to, and I appreciate that people can get there so long and then you need some fresh blood once in a while. But at the same time, I think we've gone too far to the other pendulum, where we have nobody who knows where the bathroom is, nobody who knows what public policy is.
Right. Legacy and continuity,
and therefore,
is important.
You know, a lot of these things take a lot of
years of experience to master. That's why we have staggered elections. That's why we have people that hold seats overlap. Okay? That's how we handle that.
Should we throw the bums out every couple of years and get a whole new fresh seat?
I didn't say throw the bums.
Or should we have some experience in the seat to balance out those who don't know?
I did not say throw the bums out. But I will also say that just because you've basically said, and this applies to kids, this applies to anybody you can apply it to on a personal level or a professional level, just because you have been holding the seat or taking up space for a duration of time does not necessarily equate with expertise, efficiency, expeditiousness, or effectiveness.
So how do you judge whether somebody who's been there a while should be thrown out?
If I can put something on the shelf for 10 years, doesn't mean that it basically somehow develops legs and takes on action.
I got it. So what's your criteria then? What I'm hearing you say is the criteria whether someone should hold the seat and stay there beyond a couple terms is whether they're proactively leading or whether they're just filling up.
Yeah, you cannot have an abdication of leadership. You have to engage in a leadership position. Leadership is not from behind. Leadership is taking a risk. Leadership is maybe saying something that's not popular. Leadership is not worrying about whether you continue to sit in the seat as much as it is doing something on the job. Because if you are reacting to a problem that is already a problem, that's one reality. If you are able to anticipate that we may have an issue but not know exactly what it is and put some safeguards into place to basically help alleviate it as much as possible, that's leadership. Okay, the other stuff is management. There's a difference between leadership and management. Okay, we don't have leaders in most cases sitting in those seats, and I'm not picking anybody in particular, but in general, it's not leadership that we have in these seats. It is managers that we have in these seats. We need more leadership to balance out, because if we actually can proactively lead, it will be less cost to us. It'll be less damage cost-wise negatively to what's going on. And we can possibly have independent decision-making in preparing ourselves. to have a more sustainable solution than just one that is basically a stopgap for the moment that it is. And you can apply that across any topic in any location. We have managers, not leaders, in a lot of cases.
Correct. And I think you hit upon a great remark there, because that's how I was on the Transportation Commission.
Right.
I am a leader, you know, as far as when I bring things, it's to lead the item. So, for instance, on the Transportation Commission, we talked about my transportation background. We have all sorts of things we look at to relieve traffic and to have traffic mitigation options. So we have, you know, signal synchronization that we approved, intersection improvements.
Right.
I was pushing for OC Flex. I'll continue to do that, which is kind of like an Uber style minivan that fits up to 8 individuals, and you download the app, and for $5 unlimited per day, you can take it throughout your city or the adjacent cities.
Right.
It is being piloted right now through OCTA a few different cities, but not yet in Irvine.
San Clemente doesn't have bus routes anymore, but we basically have an arrangement with Lyft.
I mean,
this is not like the seeds of this are not already around.
The seeds are there.
Right.
But like you mentioned leadership. So I brought an item. This was very common for me when I was on the commission, which was called my left-hand turn elongation item, because I was driving throughout Irvine and I said, as a transportation person, why is it that I'm driving down Culver, driving down Jamboree, or whatever street I'm on, and there were these hot spots, so to speak, and I designated several of them, but we chose about 10, where they had what I called left-hand turn pocket bleed out. I know it's kind of an interesting term. So what that is you're driving down Culver, and you're looking to make a left-hand turn. Mm-hmm. At one of the streets, let's say Warner, but you can't get into the left-hand turn pocket. It works both ways, because the mainstream traffic going straight is at a red light.
Yeah.
And so you see that the left-hand turn pocket is wide open, and you see the left-hand turn green arrow turning green, but you can't get into that pocket where you need to turn. So you're stuck behind a whole line of cars waiting to get into the pocket.
Right.
On the Converse side of that, we have
left-hand turn congested,
and it's also very dangerous.
Right.
On the Converse of that, you have what I call left-hand turn bleed out, where the so many cars want to turn left, but they're waiting at that red arrow that they're bleeding out into the general purpose lane that's going straight. And that light is green, but the people behind the left-hand turn bleed out are being blocked. And so they have to either make a quick right, which could lead to an accident if their oncoming traffic could hit them, or they're just stuck.
So what was the proposal?
So my proposal, and it was actually adopted unanimously at the Transportation Commission, was I designated 10 intersections where we could just swap out concrete for concrete, literally have left-hand turn elongation, which is take a little strip of where the island part of the left-hand turn is, elongate it slightly, allow 2-3 more cars to get in there, and therefore relieve some of that left-hand turn bleed out. It was adopted unanimously, and I am very, you know, happy that I spearheaded that I led that, because literally it's and that's what I do. I look for solutions. How can we have, and this was a very easy solution because it was a very cost-effective solution, and
that's fixing what we have. You know, we're a place that's all about shiny new stuff. We should just be building more roads.
You know what? It's if they build it, they will come, and that will cause more traffic.
Exactly.
So there's that whole side of that argument. So actually, I'm a huge proponent.
Or
the flip side
of it: let's not build any roads, and let's make it so miserable nobody will want to come here anymore.
But here's other layers. And we're all joking about this, okay? And I'm not going to mention any particular pet peeves or any hotspot topics or whatever. We've done enough of them. The point of this is this. We got to change the demographics. We talked about this. We got to change the demographic.
Correct.
We got an aging population.
Yes.
We got people that we don't want basically behind the wheels of a car if they don't want to drive themselves.
Correct.
But they have no other option but for independent living. My parents are living example of this. Okay. If I took away my dad's car, my mom would be the only one driving, and she basically has medical issues that would require her to go to the doctor's appointment and stuff like that, which means that then my father would now be stuck at home, shut in. As long as he is able to safely drive, I will not take that away from him. However, he may be feeling like he's ready to not be driving, but there's no other option. And there's no public transportation option that's on demand. I mean, thank God for Uber and Lyft now, but, you know, 5-10 years ago, there was no Uber and Lyft, right? And so what do we do with this? We have aging populations. We have less people basically driving for work necessarily, and we're still basically dealing with this thing like it's like 1990, where basically the population is a different age bracket. It's not medium age of 48
to 50. No, it's 1950.
Mm-hmm. 1950, there wasn't that many cars to be had, and they were too expensive, right? So we don't factor these things through that proactive solution delivery on provision. we basically still try to fix the problem the same way we had. We talked about economic revenue streams for cities that are basically aging, built out. So you can have only infill projects that are harder to get approved. Then you're going to have pushback from community on quality of life. You have older people that are basically not buying a lot of retail. In Irvine, it's a different dynamic because you draw people into your retail zones from a lot of places, right?
So let her react to some of these. You're throwing a lot of challenges out here.
So my point is all of these items should factor into, I don't know if you agree, Carrie, but should factor into how we develop these solutions.
Well, I love your question about the senior mobility issues, because I speak about this so often, and I actually have a PowerPoint that I have been going to different commissions and committees that I've been asked to attend with my PowerPoint and discussing senior transportation options. It's something that I will talk a lot about as I enter my campaign. I think it is so important. I do quite a bit with the senior community in Irvine, like you said.
Right.
We are an aging community, and a lot of people there
are an aging county.
Exactly. And in Irvine in particular, what you will find, you find there's several people that are original owners or have been in their homes for, you know, they put my 22, 23 years to shame. They've got 40 some odd years. So, and I embraced meeting those people when I knocked on their door. And so basically I've been talking about senior mobility options and senior transportation options. There are so many of them in our county and in our city. It's just that they may not be, we really need to publicize them. We need to get the word out.
So
let's share that.
Let's share some of those, because again, the show is sort of baby boomer focused in its origin, but you know, let's share some of those. Like, what are some things that people don't know relevant to senior transportation that you can share with people?
Perfect. I'm glad you asked. So we have OC Access, which is through OCTA.
Yeah.
That you do need to get qualified for, and there's a qualification process and an application process, and usually you do need to have...
What are some of the parameters for qualification?
So the parameters usually are that it needs to be some type of... you do need a doctor's note of some kind, and you need to be a certain age, and then you go through their process, their application process, and I can definitely give you that information in a later date, or even how I could technically have a whole show about that, because if you ever want me back on the show, because I literally, my PowerPoint is about a half hour plus the Q&A. And it's very interesting, but there are parameters for OC Access. And then in each city has what they call a senior mobility program, SMP.
Okay.
And I actually brought the list with me today. I'm going to leave it with you. And Irvine, for instance, we have Irvine Trips.
Mm-hmm.
And Irvine Trips, you don't need to, you could use it for anything. You can use it for social. You don't need to use it for doctor's
right.
appointment.
It's not life-sustaining. It could be life-enhancing.
Correct. Yeah. And it's actually it helps prevent isolationism, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm.
It's a big problem.
Exactly. We don't want our seniors to feel isolated. Mm-hmm. We want them to be able to get to the senior centers or the community centers or to have lunch with a friend or go to an appointment, but to feel that they have the ability to do so.
Well, independent mobility, independent decision making.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And it's such a huge portion, like you mentioned, quality of life. Huge quality of
life.
Absolutely. So most of the cities have these senior mobility programs, and most of them are not based on medical. They are based on age. Most of them do have the threshold of an age requirement, but some, like in Irvine, it's based on as long as you're 18 or over, if you're no longer able to drive.
Okay, so that's an interesting point, because like we have said before, we tend to be sensitive to seniors.
Correct.
We tend to be sensitive to kids, right? I've had the fortune of having people on this show that maybe, like, it was Hope Center for the Arts. Hope Center for the Arts basically provide services because children with special needs, they're provided for. Seniors, basically, or veterans and seniors, there's sort of a safety net there of services. It's interesting that somewhere along the way, we forgot that when a person has special needs as a child, when they turned 18, all of a sudden, they are not cured and basically now can be let into the general population. They still have those needs. And yet there's a break in the system. There's a hole where they fall through the cracks at the age of 18. And so agencies like Hope Center of the Arts, for example, they provide that service. So your point of the fact that it is not necessarily age specific. We have members in our communities that regardless of age are still needing that.
Correct.
Support.
Correct. Correct. And that's a great point because I can't speak for every city, but I know in Irvine, we have Irvine Trips.
Right.
As long as you're 18 or over and you cannot drive any longer for whatever reason that is, or maybe you just never had a driver's license because of certain other issues, the threshold, at least in Irvine, is just to qualify in that regard. You do not need to be 55 and over or 65 and over. You can qualify by being 18 and over.
And what does that cost?
And it's actually, I do have the costs of Irvine's program, and it's actually quite, it's a quite cost-effective mode of transportation. And like I mentioned in my PowerPoint, which I actually did bring a point and I can leave it copy, I can leave it with you today, is that each senior mobility program is slightly different. Each one is very different. Some are Irvine Trips, for instance. We have 12 trip vehicles in our fleet. It's a $25 one-time enrollment fee, $20 annual fee, and a $1.90 one way.
That's crazy.
So it's very reasonable as far as, you know, this is something that could be, you know, and it's offered to anyone age 18 and over who can no longer drive.
Is this service provided by the city through contract services? Is it provided city through, you know, city employees, staff? Does it vary from city to city?
That's a great question. And each city's is slightly different. I can't speak upon all the cities that have the senior mobility programs, and most of them do. And I'll leave that list with you as well with their phone numbers.
Thank you.
But in Irvine, yes, I met with our supervisor who is a city employee, and she did show me the fleet. And I had known about it because of my transportation background. But recently, when I was making my PowerPoint, I said, I want to really get into the nuts and bolts. And that's who I am. I vet things through and through. You'll find out about me is that I'm a very deep thinker, a very independent deep thinker.
Well, with that duality of degrees, I can only imagine.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So yes, it's a very important aspect, though, to get back to your question, to make sure that our seniors, or even those that may not be seniors but just cannot drive for one reason or another, have the ability so they don't have isolation. And then isolation leads to other medical and other issues.
Well, it puts them into more of a vulnerable population.
Correct.
They're at more risk. They basically get, I mean, anybody, regardless of age, regardless of whatever, you're isolated, you're lonely.
Correct.
You know, you become susceptible to be, preyed upon, right? And we are, as human beings, built for connection. So that is something that we somehow tend to forget sometimes. It's an uncomfortable thing for us to deal with people of certain needs. You know, we don't want to. Go ahead, Paul.
Somebody tweeted in, and I guess they're looking for kind of a quick summary. We've been talking round and round, lots of issues and lots of changes. What's missing on the council, and what would you bring to the council that's not there right now?
Thank you for that question. I think I bring a voice of, like I said, public policy, deep thinking, and just this logical reasoning with my background of public policy married with my longevity in Irvine and knowing everything, the nuts and bolts of our community so well, but also having that problem-solving background of, like you said, there was a cul-de-sac full of people that were having a parking issue. I knew where to go. I knew what to do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that can-do ability to think quickly, to come up with the public policy and be a leader for it. Draft the ordinance, which I've often done on my own when I was working at the Board of Supervisors, drafting things, drafting ideas, drafting agenda items, and vetting them through and through. One thing I'm known for on the Transportation Commission is just that really deep thinking, vetting of issues. I bring with me, I'm very moderate. I'm issue-based and community-based. So for me, it's not a party thing. It's not a partisan thing, as you had mentioned before.
It should not
be at the local level.
Right.
And so for me, I get the question all the time, what party are you in? Because for me, and that's the best compliment I could receive, because it's not to me about any type of party thing or partisan thing. It's all about issue-based, doing what I can do to help my neighbors, my community, and the residents of Irvine. So I think I bring that, and I bring just this deep desire to serve that just truly motivates me. And I think we talked about that at the beginning of the show.
So give me five issues. Mm-hmm. We talked about transportation and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Give me 3 to 5 more issues that are faced, like very quickly, faced in Irvine right now that are on your radar screen.
Absolutely. Thank you. So public safety, we are the number one safest city of our size in the nation, but I really do want to keep us in that role.
So it's more of a maintaining that.
That, making sure we have those public safety, emphasis in place.
Okay.
The master plan. I've talked about this on my 2018 campaign. I will continue to talk about it.
Are you guys going through a new master plan process right now?
So when I say master plan, I mean that's the essence of Irvine. I talk a lot. I'm a philosopher at heart, as you know, philosophy and law and society degrees. So I believe the master plan is the essence of Irvine. It's what makes Irvine Irvine. So
what's the date on the last master plan that was adopted by City Council?
So the master plan is more the backbone. Yeah. And so basically when I say the essence of Irvine, I'm basically saying that when we look to have, like you mentioned, these developments or these issues that come and go, and what are we going to do with this project or that project or this, it's to have the master plan dictate it, and at least stay within the master plan for smart, you know, to do things in a smart way within the master plan and not go outside of the master plan. Has there been situations
like that where they have gone, there's been attempts to go outside the master plan?
I'm glad you asked. So I was involved, the Rancho San Joaquin folks, which is another village of Irvine, they had come to me and they came to several of the commissioners and council members when their golf course was being jeopardized, their open space. And so another big issue to me is the open space. That kind of parlays into my next issue. Mm-hmm. And I said wholeheartedly, I will help them. I will speak at public meetings.
A critical issue in communities that are built out.
Correct. Yeah. So I helped them protect their open space along with other commissioners.
Mitigated land.
Exactly. And so to protect that, to make sure that is retained as open space as it's supposed to be within the master plan. So we really helped that neighborhood out, and I will continue to do so.
Well, direct correlation to quality of life, right?
Correct. And I'm a long distance runner. I love to hike. I'm a long distance runner for decades. So it's for everything. It's for our active transportation folks. It's for our runners, our hikers. But it's also just for our aesthetics of Irvine, to keep that open space and protect that land, protect that open space. So that's a huge issue of mine, which parlays into the protection of the master plan, you know, within that as well. So I'll continue to, you know, basically help those neighborhoods retain their open space and to keep their neighborhoods, you know, as villages, as Irvine.
So, Carrie, give me a couple more issues that you think are paramount right now.
Absolutely. So I talk a lot about an ethics committee, and so that's very interesting to me. A lot of large cities do have ethics commissions and ethics committees, so that would be something that I definitely want to look into. I talk a lot about, like I mentioned, the transportation, the public safety, the open space, and also just keeping an eye on our quality of life, which is everything from, you know, how we're moving, what direction we're moving in, making sure our education stays solid for our children, and that we have all these wonderful parks and resources here in Irvine. I think one of the reasons people move to Irvine is the quality of life. Mm-hmm. You can walk a block or two and you're at a park. That's why my husband and I moved here. We moved here because we said we want to raise our children where there are parks, there's sports, there's just a wonderful quality of life. And I'll continue to make sure that that's...
Paul, did you have a question?
I hate to bring this up, but as an outsider and hearing so many people talk about it, I got to bring up the Great Park. Was that a great opportunity that was missed? Was it a big boondoggle that where they blew all the money, or is it still to be?
So that's a great question. And so I became a transportation commissioner a couple years ago when the transportation commission got back on the books. It had been kind of defunct or fell off the wayside for a while. And it was brought back a few years ago. And so for the 2 years that I was a transportation commissioner, it was a fairly new commission again, back, you know, kind of after having not been there for a long time. So the Great Park issues, many of them have gone to previous councils, and also the council, the current council and future councils will be looking at it. I've always said that the Great Park needs to be a park for everybody. We need to talk to our residents. We need to get everybody involved and make sure that it does exemplify what our whole community could benefit from, not just one. Like you said, we're a blending of many communities.
Right.
So not just one community. We need to make sure there's something for everybody.
Well, and that's what I talk about, that leadership position. Because when you have a built-out community where you have areas that have, over the course of time, been mitigated land or open space golf courses or, you know, like a park or an area that has been designated, like there's this big area that's designated off Harbor now that's the old, what is that facility that I'm thinking of? Fairview property that's down on Harbor in Costa Mesa or Santa Ana that basically...
I know when you're talking about it, I remember what it's called.
That's basically was special needs and mental health, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's a massive piece of property. And we are basically a Southern California as a culture driven by real estate development. That is what we consider our primary economic engine. And all of a sudden you have a resource open up for that has competing interests, competing demands, competing special interests involved in it. There needs to be a person or a group of people that are able to say, I appreciate your own take on this, but we have to look at the overall picture and the overall common benefit. And basically stand and weather that storm regardless of where personal interests lie. And I think the situation with the park, I mean, the fact that you guys are still in dealing with the cemetery question in Irvine, I mean, I think it's on the books like for this week even for discussion.
Yeah.
Right? That is telling. Like, this is not something that just, oh, yeah, listen, let's have a park. This has been ongoing for how long, Paul? Like, over a decade?
Well, and I hate to be aggressive, I will be here for one thing. I always wondered, I don't live in Irvine, but I always wondered why heads didn't roll. This giant park was landed in their lap. A bunch of money was given to them. Most of that money was blown on studies. And how many years later, there isn't much there but a big, empty, open land. Well, I wonder whether or not it could have been done differently, should have been done differently, or if it needs to be done at all, and we should just build it out and turn it into homes.
I mean, yeah. I'll let Carrie take this, but I will just say this: I've seen this happen on small parks. I've seen it happen on multiple projects. Okay, money is assigned or designated for a particular effort. Let's say, for argument's sake, it's $500,000 designated for whatever, to do something. There's a need-driven, you know, assessment.
Right.
The city council takes action. They say, we're going to basically budget for this. We're putting it in the budget for next year to achieve X. And it's going to be $500,000 that we're basically allocating allowance for this thing. Then we go to a study situation. And by the time we were done, and back and forth, and time taken, and not responding, and all, whatever, we end up spending $300,000 of the $500,000 on the due diligence
component. On the consultants, yeah.
Right. And then now we are basically have the results of a piece of paper and a report and whatever you want to call it, and we only have $200,000 left to basically allocate for what we estimated was going to be
a half a million dollar project.
So what happens? We take that report, we put it on the back burner, and we say we're going to basically revisit this next time around, and we'll basically reallocate funds. By the time those funds are reallocated, the time has passed. That piece of paper now we cannot trust, so we got to basically go through a revision of that thing again.
Right,
and this is what I'm talking about. Now you could never get away with that in public. In personal business, you could never get away with that in corporate. That would be your job. You'd be gone.
So why didn't the city, why didn't heads roll? Because there was a once-in-a-generational transfer of land, a huge piece of property. Everybody got excited. Everybody had different visions. And largely, most of that didn't get realized, and all the money got blown.
So, like I said, I was on the Transportation Commission. It's been a couple years when I was a commissioner. And so you're talking about things, you know, from prior
way
councils.
Before, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. Right. I was in Irvine. I was not a commissioner. I was working at OCTA or the county or whatnot. But I think that's what you're referring to when you say these prior councils or whatnot. But looking forward, because I'm always forward looking. And so I'm not looking at, like you mentioned, some of these other things. I'm always forward looking. And what can we do in the future?
Yeah.
Seen things succeed, like you said, these private public partnerships seem to very much be successful.
Right.
And we've already had several at the Great Park with the ice arena, with the sports parks. My son just played baseball on Saturday. He's with a travel ball league. They play out of the Great Park every now and then. And it's wonderful to see the different soccer players, the softball, baseball. So really, I do think it's starting to thrive. We're moving in a great direction. And so I'd love to be a part of that leadership and to move in that wonderful direction as we look forward, because I think it's wonderful ground for a lot of different options.
Yeah, the OC soccer club is a great facility. They are engaged and constantly innovative in how they basically engage the community and bring them in for different activities. It's a first class, you know, venue for teams. They have it's great for anybody who's involved in that sport as a local resource in Irvine. You could pursue a career in that now, which is a big step forward for Orange County. It's the only professional team in Orange County.
But is there any money left to build out the rest of it, or is it just going to sit empty for generations to come here?
I don't think it will sit empty. I do think that there's a plan. You know, the Great Park, the committee, they meet you know, and they do have a plan. And I do think it's really vetting things with the residents, because like you said, this is the park of the residents. This is the park of the people, and it needs to exemplify that. Yes, we have the sports component, the ice arena component, other components, are going to be coming. And so possibly the water park, other items. And there's a wealth of other options. So I think right now it's just forward looking and making sure that a lot of those will be public private partnerships, and making sure they come to fruition and that there's something there
for
everybody.
Will they have to sell off more of it like they did to Four Points to finance any of this?
And, you know, this is really getting into the nitty gritty. And so when I'm on the council, I would definitely start really looking at some of the really, you know, where are we? I've already started looking at what are the options. But when these things come to the council or to the Great Park Committee, I should say, then you're really looking at really at the dollars and cents and kind of where things are going. And I think that's where we're moving into.
But look, the
analysis. So
the bigger underlying question is, I think, transparency.
Correct.
Right. So, I mean, I think if there is transparency and then there is engagement by the community, because there's also personal accountability on the community level. Okay. You cannot just show up once every 7 years and basically say, well, what about this?
Right.
And then basically walk off.
Right.
There has to be a vested engagement on the community level. Okay. There has to be a vested importance in educating the community from the public policy level.
Correct.
Okay. There has to be transparency. Right. There has to be maybe a sunshine clause of basically, you know, identifying lobbying entities and special interest groups and that be part and parcel of how the city conducts itself. These are all growing pains that every community in Orange County, every community that's evolved and grown and is now basically maybe, you know, almost built out or built out, right, that they're facing. Mm-hmm. And it's like just anybody who has ever built a company. When you first start building a company, your realities, your challenges, your opportunities are different than from where now you've been operating this company for 10 years. And your operational model, your sustainability of the company, what you put your money towards, innovation or otherwise, changes.
Correct.
So these are living entities,
exactly.
These cities, right?
Exactly. And I think you mentioned the word transparency. That's another item that I'm running on as well, because we do have the transparency portal, which is, you know, on our website.
Right.
You can see the different reports, and it's wonderful to have that all in one place. And I want to take that one step further and look into an ethics committee or commission where it could be a two-way street where residents, right now, if a resident has a question or wants, you know, to have more of a dialogue, somewhere for them to go to actually have that question answered or have that dialogue or a little bit more of a two-way, you know.
Well, I don't think it's avoidable. And I think it's interesting to watch it in Irvine, because Irvine has, and I mentioned this to you before, you know, Irvine has actively sought out high density, diverse appeal for multiple people, multi-generations,
correct.
A lot of millennials. You got seniors on one side. You got millennials are coming in that are not necessarily from Irvine originally that are now living there. So the matrix and composition of the community of residents is changing dramatically. And I don't think it's avoidable at the city council unless it's some sort of protected approach to this. But it is inevitable that diversity of community is going to have to start being echoed in the city council. And the first step of that is going to be transparency.
Absolutely.
So again, being smart, building that into the matrix is going to cause a sense of engagement by the community and sense of appropriate representation by the community, or it's going to basically be a pain. And so you said it in your letters that you send me. Thank you for sharing those with me, mm-hmm. Carrie. But, you know, that Irvine finds itself at a crossroads.
Absolutely. I say that all the time. We are at a crossroads.
And I think on a little bit of a, you know, more helicopter view, I think the county faces the same
Absolutely.
Crossroads.
Absolutely.
Right? And so it's not like when I moved to San Clemente in 87. It's not like, you know, when you moved to Irvine 22 years ago.
Exactly.
Okay, things have changed. And the only constant, we started the show with this, and I will finish with this. The only constant is change. So the people that you are looking to elect in 2020 and beyond, look at what it is that they are bringing to the table. Look at it, what it is that they have done in the past that speaks for what they are able to achieve in terms of skill set, in terms of, you know, ability to think through, problem solve. And when it comes to city council, I urge you to really vote the person and the issue and not the political party, because that doesn't gain you anything. That just means that you got a T-shirt with a certain color. But it doesn't mean what the person who's wearing that T-shirt is the person that's going to be able to do what you need them to do to sustain yourself, your family, your children, to maintain the quality of life in your communities that you live, and to really represent you.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And it's just my honor to be here and to talk with you. And it would be my honor to represent the 277,000 residents of Irvine on the Irvine City Council.
Well, I wish you luck, Carrie. And
thank you
for spending the time here. I would like to invite you to come back and talk about the senior transportation options. I think that is a topic that is critical. It has always been. We are so underprepared in Orange County, in the country, you know, for dealing with the silver tsunami of an aging population. And transportation is a critical one in a place like Southern California, where we are very much a car culture. And if somebody basically themselves don't feel comfortable driving anymore because they're getting disoriented, they really don't want to, you know, and they don't have an option, or their family members that are really concerned about their safety, but then they can't really be there 24/7 to basically monitor them all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to develop solutions as communities in the best interest of our, whether it is people with special needs that are not age specific or with an aging population. So please do consider coming back and sharing that with us.
I would be honored to do so.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it, and good luck with your campaign.
Thank you.
Paul, thanks again for manning the board.
Thank you very much.
Always here.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for another episode of The Rad Life. We will be back again next week. And then we are going to be taking a hiatus for the month of August again. So reach out to me if you choose to be on the show, because we are booking already for September. But I'm going to take a little break after four and a half years almost being on the air on this show. So I think I'm due. and I will see you guys next week. Thanks, everybody. Please check out Carrie's website. What's your website,
Carrie? Yes, it's Carrie at carrieforirvine.com.
And spell Carrie.
C-A-R-R-I-E.
For Irvine.com.
Carrie for F-O-R, Irvine.com.
Yep.
And I'd very much appreciate anyone that wants to contact me. My contact information's on the website
and on
Facebook.
And if you can't find it, reach out to us on the show on Facebook or Instagram or just reach out to me, and I'm more happy to connect you. And go check it out. Get informed. Get engaged. Vote.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.